From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Let's be honest. We can't be shocked that there's a lot of data about us on the web, that Facebook and Google are gold mines of intimate personal info. But changes in both are highlighting privacy issues in the web's evolution, Facebook's timeline, Google's new privacy policy, which gets you from every angle. Naked. This hour on Point, Google, Facebook, and your privacy now. You can join the conversation. Are you up on the changes coming at Google, Facebook? Are you ready for this? Happy for the convenience? Wondering about your privacy? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We'll hear in this hour from web guru Jeff Jarvis and privacy guru Mark Rotenberg. But joining us first from New York is super guru Stephen Levy, senior writer for Wired magazine. He's got the goods on what's happening privacy-wise from Google to Facebook and beyond. Author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives, and Crypto. Stephen Levy, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for the guru status. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. It's very high. Very high indeed. Look, there's no secret about this. Google's talking about it all over the place. Many of us have seen, you know, messages from them flash across our screen saying we've got a big new privacy policy coming. But you know how that goes, Stephen. I mean, what, 1 in 100 people who really dig down in there to see what's happening. What is, we'll start with Google. What are they doing?
So, as you mentioned, Google has a lot of information about us. Google has a lot of different products. It started out with just search, of course, which gets a lot of really valuable information about people. When you go to the search engine, you're really telling Google, you know, what you're thinking about, what your interests are, what you want to do, and, you know, a lot of secrets come out there.
Sure.
In addition to that, all the other products it has, traditionally, it's kept those products siloed, and they had different privacy policies for a lot of them. A couple of years ago, they did change their privacy policy with less fanfare than we're seeing today to put some of them together. But what they're doing now is they're saying, look, we just want one big privacy policy, because what we really want to do is bring all the things to Google together, and it'll all be one big Google. And we could then use information in different products, use it together, ostensibly, they say, to serve their users better and to serve better ads to their users.
So that means across every product you use, Google product, they'll be watching every click, everything you type in, every place you are, because this includes, I mean, Android smartphones, which have very often they're tracking where you are, news readers, digital wallets, what you spend on everything. They're putting into one hopper and sort of thinking, I guess that's one way to put it, but they'll put their formulas to work on what's going on with you, where you are, what you're doing, what you might need next.
Right. Well, the key to remember is they're not getting any more information with this change than they already had. They're just saying that it's going to benefit the users, they say. And obviously, if the users are happy, then Google's happy. It makes more money by being able to do this. And some of the examples they give is if they know you're a vegan and you're searching for a restaurant, they know from your location that you're in New York City, and they won't show you barbecue restaurants.
Okay, because you're not going to be eating barbecue, you're a vegan, but it really gets right into your sort of daily life here when you triangulate off of all the information sources they have. I mean, one of the things they're kind of bragging about it is you've got a meeting on your calendar. You haven't right. mentioned, you might have made this, written it down months ago. Now you're driving, you're on your way to your meeting, and suddenly you hear from Google. What might they tell you?
They might say, you know what, we know the traffic is really busy on Route 101, you know, where you are now. You're headed to your meeting. Your meeting is at noon, and, you know, you're not going to make it. They're going to give you an alert.
So, I mean, even in real time, they're going to know what you've planned, where you're headed, who you're meeting with, where that meeting is, where you are now. And even without you asking, they're going to sort of say, hello, here's some information you might need. I've got a little tape here from Google as they announced their proposed new privacy policy. They released this ad to help users understand what the change might be. Puts a, you know, beautiful spin on it.
The new policy reflects our efforts to create one beautifully simple experience. It means that if you're signed in, We'll treat you as a single user across all of our products, combining information you've provided from one service with information from the others, so you have a better, more intuitive experience from the moment you sign in to the second you log out, whether you're sending mail, making meetings, watching videos, or searching. Over time, it'll mean better Google search results and ads. It can mean more accurate spelling suggestions because you've typed a word before. And it may even mean we'll be able to tell you when you'll be late for a meeting, based on your location, your calendar, and local traffic conditions.
Google describing some of the uses that they'll put their information to under their new privacy policy. Some people applauding this, saying great. On the other hand, you've got Gizmodo's Matt Honan wrote a post titled, It's Official, Google is Evil Now. Of course, their thing was, don't be evil.
Right. Yeah, yeah. When I did my book, I really got into that, whether they regret being so upfront
signing off evil.
About that being their motto. They put it in their prospectus for the IPO. I'll be curious to see what the Facebook IPO looks like, whether that has that something like that in it too. But they when I was doing the book, and this about a year ago, when I stopped asking them this question, they were still okay with it. They said, we still think it was a useful thing. But every time they do something, people bludgeon them, saying, "Oh yeah, Mister, don't be evil. How about this? How about that?"
Well, I mean, we're just asking today. Maybe it'll be a paradigm of great convenience. And it is not data that they don't have already somewhere in their empire, but it will all be sewn together. It will flow across all these boundaries. They'll put it all together to think about us, to serve us up to advertisers, to serve information to us. I'm reading here, Stephen Levy, this is from your colleague Tim Carmody at Wired, and he wrote this. He said, "I don't think Google is evil, at least in the sense that Google and we thought of evil in the tech industry a decade ago." And then he wrote, "I think it's becoming something else, something more than a little uncanny, something that despite conjecture, projections, fictions, and a combination of excitement and foreboding, we haven't fully prepared ourselves to recognize yet." It does seem to me, Stephen, that when you just feel the bulk of all this data being so in such a sophisticated manner, sliced and diced and turned around to serve us and to watch us, these things are morphing into something bigger than we imagined, or most of us anyway, a decade and more ago.
You know, I think the people at Google would take that as a great compliment. What they want to do is come up with something that might feel weird at first, but they hope we'll accept it as part of our lives, just as finding an amazing search, engine was, a revelation to us in 1998, and we take it for granted now when we, are experienced critics, and say, "What? They didn't find this incredibly obscure piece of information? What's the matter with Google?" Whereas once, even finding anything would have taken a lot of huge effort there. Google's future, they see something, talk about something on campus called zero query search, where they really give us search results before we even type about it, before we.
So they know what you're wondering at that moment.
Yeah, they think, well, you're probably going to ask for this search query soon. Let's give you the result now.
That's pretty wild. I mean, I'm reading here in the Washington Post, Jeffrey Chester's quote. He's at the Center for Digital Democracy. He says, "There's no way a user can comprehend the implication of Google collecting across platforms for information about your health, political opinions, financial concerns." Yes, they've had the data, but in some ways we're new territory just on how sophisticated. Then we come to Facebook. And, of course, they got their big IPO coming. They're going to be worth $100 billion or something is the valuation that may be on it. And they have recently introduced this thing called Timeline. A lot of Facebook users have signed up for it already. Others may not have. Others aren't even on Facebook. Can you explain what the change there is, Stephen?
Yeah, it's interesting. Facebook doesn't need that kind of change to the privacy policy because everything in Facebook is already mushed together there. And what they want to do is, get even more information putting all your information in this sort of like auto-generating autobiography called Timeline. It's sort of like this master scrapbook that includes not only the stuff that you post to Facebook and stuff that, pictures of you that your friends might post to Facebook, but also they've invited outside software developers, application developers, to create applications that generate more data about you that automatically goes into the timeline. For instance, there's this thing called the Washington Post Social Reader, and all the articles you read in the Washington Post using this application get posted to your timeline. So your timeline includes the articles you read. It includes the music you listen to on services like Spotify or RDO or Moog. And, the your exercise runs. There's an app for that. And there's an app for all sorts of things. The default is that they're going to report that to your timeline. So the idea is that this would be, you know, all the information about you collected in one place where presumably you can control who sees it. But of course, it's sort of complicated to say, well, you know, this group of friends can see this and I don't want my mom to see that.
Right.
So a lot of people just wind up just leaving it sit there.
And the big change, of course,
the next week, this is going to be imposed on all of us. Whether you like it or not, you're going to get a timeline.
Everything you've ever put up on Facebook, very easily accessible. You can just click on the year you want to look at, the month you want to look at, the date you want to look at, and very likely you'll be able to see what that person
your life is like now a Ken's Burn documentary.
Right, right. Anybody can look anywhere. It used to be there was a kind of privacy here, Stephen, just in the great mountain of stuff. It was just a hassle to go back years and look at those old beer pong photos from 2003. It's not hard now. It's, in fact, it's dead easy.
Right. And, you know, and Facebook thinks that people are going to love this. Facebook's, you know, a story time and again, and this is the lesson I think they've extracted from it, is when they push us to share more, at first we push back, but then, as it happens a few times, not all times, they had a sort of a debacle with one of the advertising things where they tried to make people share too much. But in some other things like the news feed, which are now very popular on Facebook, you know, people have come to accept it. And they think timeline is going to be one of these things that some people might balk at first, but later they'll realize that they get a benefit from sharing with the world.